Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, folks. This is Dave Schmidt. I'm your host here again tonight on the Sedona Connection. I'm glad to have you back with me again this week. Last week was an interesting week as we talked about what was, you know, the situation with the government shutdown, how it was affecting what was, you know, basically the dinar dong revaluation, the currency exchange situation. And it ended up being taken care of while we were there and we were on the air. And, you know, most of you have known that I have five different bloggers that I primarily listen to. I should say that I watch the most. And all five of them were saying that they were almost pretty darn certain, dead certain it was going to happen by Friday over the weekend, and it didn't. Now, we'll talk a little bit about that tonight. But what I want to get into later on is the main topic of the evening that I put out there is that what's going to happen when this dinar takes place, or I should say, the reval takes place. How is that going to affect us? How is it going to affect our country? How is it going to affect the economy? What is it going to do to the stock market? All kinds of different things. Some of the writers on the bloggers are beginning to say, hey, folks, you got to be quiet. You got to stay secret. You can't really talk about this because some of the authorities are now beginning to think that this could create some ruckus. I've felt that for some time. You can't keep something like this quiet and then all of a sudden it explodes onto the scene without the other 99% begin to say, what's going on here? Mr. President, you knew about this. Why didn't you tell us? Congress, you knew about this. Why didn't you tell us? Media, you knew about this. Why didn't you tell us? And so there can be some sort of a reaction. And that is the reaction that can create the chaos or what I call the crisis. We'll get into that a little bit later. But what I want to do right now, I just want to again say thank you. I'm sitting here in my home in beautiful Sedona, Arizona. It was a wonderful day today. Got up to about 81 degrees today. Not a cloud in the sky. Always loving it here. And we're watching and transpiring everything that's taking place here. When I started the program, the Sedona Connection, I didn't think I was going to end up coming into this situation here where it was just this was going to be front and center on, you know, the currency exchange topic. But as you know, it's a topic that I love. It's one I'm very knowledgeable about. I can speak to it very well. And most of all, it's what's helping you because it's what's front and center for us. Well, let me mention something else. I'm doing something else tonight that I have never done before. I've opened up the chat window. So if you are logged in online there at the Blog Talk Radio website, you scroll down, you're going to see the chat window. And what I'm going to do, I said, yeah, folks, I'm coming into the 21st century, okay? I hadn't done that before. And I'll get into a little bit of why I allowed this to happen. Well, but a lot of you, you have a lot of questions. And but what you don't want to call in, and I understand that. Some of you folks, you don't want to call in live on the air. But what you can do, send me your questions on the chat window, and I will do the best that I can to addressing every one of them because I've got here a separate screen in front of me, and I've got the chat window is there. And, in fact, for those of you folks that are in there, I'm going to say, here I am. This is Dave, and I just sent that little message on the chat window so all you folks can see that you're there. And I know a couple of you already have made a couple little comments there. So later on, what we'll do, I'll just start opening up and I'll even address some of your questions that you can bring in on the chat window. So feel free to go ahead and do those. I've already see that we've got about 64 people here already are on the chat window. And then we've got 10 callers that are here live on the switchboard. That's what we have right now. But last night, folks, I was able to be the guest on another radio program. It is called The Hidden Wisdom. And it was with Bernadette Dickinson, and it was a wonderful time. Bernadette was somewhat new to the situation of here being in the dinar. She has her own radio program that she hosts every week. and she felt, man, this was such a great hot topic. And so I was on the guest for 2 weeks, I mean for 2 hours last night. It was a wonderful program. And some of your comments that are coming in already, thank you very much. I mean, a lot of you had said that it was one of the first times you've been able to hear the full big story of what's going on here. Because I talked about the history behind the reval, going all the way back to the 1860s with the Rothschild family, the finance side of it, the money side of it, all tied in with the divine aspect, the spiritual side of it. Well, what I've done tonight, I have invited Bernadette to come and join me on the program here tonight for just a couple minutes. And Bernadette, how are you doing? Welcome to the program tonight.
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Dave. How are you?
I am doing good. Hey, would you do me a favor, Bernadette? Now, I am hearing, I'm seeing that I'm coming across kind of fuzzy, because, see, I don't ever get to hear myself. So is the sound coming across okay?
You sound really good right now, yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, good. That's just what I need to know then. Okay. Because I think I might have discovered that my connection of my microphone into the computer is not really strong, and I might have to get a new one there. So, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great.
Hey, I really enjoyed being with you last night. I want you to know that. I thought it was a great program, and the comments from the folks coming in have been very, very positive. How about you? Have you been receiving some stuff?
I was getting hit with emails before the show even ended from a lot of your listeners, so thank you for those of you who emailed me. It was a pleasure and an honor. And, you know, the invitation is still there. If people listen to the show from last night and they actually have some question or whatever, feel free to email me anything I can answer. You know, I'm not the finance person. I am the spiritual person. So this whole thing is completely new to me. But I do think that there's some merit to it, certainly, or I wouldn't have had to on the show, nor would I have gotten in.
Folks, you can get in touch with that program last night. Her program is called the Hidden Wisdom Radio. All you do is log into Blog Talk Radio, and then in the search window, you would put Hidden Wisdom Radio. Click on the search, and then that'll bring up her blog site, her website that's there. Same way if you want to find mine, the Sedona Connection, you just put it into the search window. And you can always listen to that program anytime archived. And I know that's what a lot of people do. I know, you know, Bernadette, on my programs here, it's almost like a 4-to-1 ratio. You get 4 people listen to it archived versus every one person who listens to it live. Is that similar with you?
It is, yeah, it is true. And, you know, one thing I was saying now that you've got the chat window open, because I'm on the phone, I don't know if the call or the listeners can hear the same. I always ask people in the chat room if the sound starts to cut out to say something in the chat room, because then it's kind of instant feedback.
Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. Yeah. That is helpful, because I've already seen, you know, a couple folks. I've got a couple little smiley faces with, you know, stuff like that. And I've got one person already said no problem. I've got another wonderful guy by the name of Bob who says howdy from Texas. And so, but, you know, I'm coming into the 21st century. And Bernadette, I have to thank you for that, because I was just oblivious to it, and I've been doing a program like this for over a year and a half. I'd never used the chat window, and when I was on the air with you last night, we had it, and I thought, my gosh, I think I'll do that.
Yeah, well, it's kind of intimidating, and it takes a lot of focus to be able to multitask, but it does make it kind of nice, because people can ask questions in the chat, and I think I've been doing my show for 5 years now, so I'm kind of over the overwhelm, and I've gotten used to it, but it takes some getting used to.
You know, you and I got into a little bit of a discussion off the air last night that I might want to talk about for a little bit here. You're a clairvoyant psychic. You basically, that to me, that's just another form of a channeling. And last, the bloggers were all saying it was going to happen. And a lot of the different channel sources also said this thing was coming down by the weekend or Monday at the very latest. And nothing happened. And a lot of these channel messages haven't been correct. And yet, a lot of them I know personally, and they're really good at what they do. And so it's kind of surprised me that they've just been wrong on this. What's your kind of your take on that? Why do you think that would be happening?
Well, the way clairvoyance and clairaudience, psychic gifts work, we are tuning into a universal wisdom, sometimes spirit guides, sometimes us who have crossed over. But when you're asking a question that is affecting a large group of people, and there's a large group of people involved, unless you know the number one person who can, so to speak, hit the switch, and you can tune directly into their energy and what's going on with them, it's going to be really hard to predict timing because there's too many hands in the pot. And like you and I were talking, you know, when I'm doing a reading for one person, I can read it really cleanly. When I do business readings for people, and I do a lot of them, and there ends up being, like I did one with a business that was trying to take over another business, there ended up being several people involved, all of the aspects of it became very cloudy and very hard to read because so many people were involved in it, different personalities, different energies, different intentions, different underlying hidden intentions. And the same thing goes on with something like this that's that big. So it really is going to be one group in the group that's pulling this off and hitting that switch and saying, okay, it's going to happen. They may have a certain timing in mind. In their mind, it's all set up. But another part of that group, a different faction of that group, may say, no, we have a different plan. Well, who are you tuning into? And that's where I think the timing issues are really going to be difficult to clearly identify.
And that makes
sense.
It's because I'm hearing you, when a person who channels or is a psychic and they're working with just one person, they're only tapping into one energy source. And to me, this is something that is so huge. It's literally millions and millions of people all around the world. And there are lots of different sources of information that are saying different things. And I just think it's I don't want to use the term it's too big for any of them, but I would say it's creating a cloudiness for them because there's just too much distortion of too many messages coming in that are hard to tap into. Does that sound right?
It does. And, I mean, when you think about what we do as psychics, we're going beneath the veil, behind the veil. So that which isn't seen on the surface, that's what we go and dive into, and we feel around and we see images and we get messages and whatnot. So it isn't just how many people this is affecting. It's mainly the groups in charge of. And there, you have to look at it. How many countries are involved in making this happen? How many people in those countries are making this happen? When you start adding up the numbers of the number of people involved and then the technology involved to bring it all to pass, it's a lot to predict. So I don't know that the timing can be nailed. I really don't. I mean, if it were happening certainly within the next day, I think everyone would probably get the same thing, or and not just psychics. The people involved would feel it. You know what I mean? Literally feel it. So my best gauge with it is, how do I feel about it? And because I know a lot of psychics that predict a lot of global stuff, and I will read their predictions and will not go with anything unless I actually feel some movement in me that says, yeah, this is going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, a lot of people, I mean, most of the people who listen to this program, they understand, you know, what is called psychics or channel readings and stuff like that. But for those that don't understand that, or it's kind of somewhat new to you, or it even sounds kind of scary, I've just heard it explained, it really isn't much different than a cell phone communication. You're tapping into, you're able to tap into an energy source. And
the energy source. Honestly, it is. There's one energy source. You can call that God. You can call it the universe. Yeah. You can call it Allah. You can call whatever you're comfortable with. But the reality is, it's one energy source, and it's one universal wisdom, and that is what we tap into. And within that communication line, much like a cell phone, you know, communication, there is a certain line each one of us can connect to. The more connected you are to yourself, the more connected you are to get that universal wisdom in clear, concise messages. So it is no different, mm-hmm. literally. You know, you just have to get yourself into a certain state and, you know, so to speak, dial the number. But it is reaching a certain vibratory place that you can pull that information in.
All right. And I think what we're beginning to realize, where, you know, 20, 30, 50 years ago, it always seemed so mystical and so woo-woo, but now we're even able to tap into and to explain it in whatever what we give normal scientific terms, is that, no, it's just a different type. You're tapping into an energy source. Just as cell phones communicate wirelessly all around the world in what they do. They just, you know, there's modems that are involved, filters that it has to go through. It translates. It operates wirelessly to a receiver and then goes through a modem on the other end to bring your voice out as it is. And when we understand all events and everything in the universe is comprised of energy, it's just tapping into that energy is what it is. And some people
exactly.
can do that and do that very well.
And more people are waking yeah. up to gifts. I mean, in the Bible it says that there were 7 spiritual gifts, and each one of us have a gift. You know, it's, are you aware of what your gift is? Are you afraid of what your gift is? Or are you willing to operate and allow that gift to flow through you and flow freely? I didn't always allow it to flow. Make no mistake. I ran from it for a long time. I was born this way and into a evangelical Christian home, which started Catholic. So it wasn't accepted. Even though it was handed down to me from my grandmother, it wasn't something that was accepted. So I fought with it for a long time until I couldn't anymore, and it made no sense because my life was really going in strange directions in my battle to just ignore all the things that were happening and all the messages I was given. And now that I've been going with it for the last, you know, 15, 16 years, everything flows. And I think it's no different with anybody. And it takes doesn't take that much work. It just takes getting really quiet.
Yeah. That's really the key, isn't it? It's getting rid of the chatter in your mind and being able to distinguish that voice that's from the one source coming through versus the chatter of all your other thoughts. And when the chatter's there, it's in A Course in Miracles where it says, the voice of God is heard in the quiet mind. Mm-hmm. It's in the quiet mind that you can hear the voice of God come through for you. If you've got all kinds of chatter going on in your mind, you can't hear this. And folks,
people always ask me, like, how come my prayers don't get answered? And my answer is always pretty simple. Prayer is asking. Prayer is sometimes begging. Meditation is listening. So when you get into a meditative state, when you quiet your mind and you get rid of all of that chatter, all of the questions, and you just sit in the stillness, then all those things you've been praying for, you start to get the answers to or the inspiration for or the feeling of what to do, how to handle something or how to solve something. And all of that information is available in the state of meditation. In the state of prayer, you're either giving thanksgiving or you're asking for something. In the state of meditation, it is a place of receiving. So there's the difference. And I think if more of us get into a place of meditation, of stilling the mind, quieting the mind, then we can all get those answers.
You know, to people in the biblical era, we take prayer and we think of it as communication and asking things of God. They understood that differently. They truly knew that true prayer was basically meditation. It's being mm-hmm. in that place of quietness and stillness. And yes, you can be carrying on two-way conversations with God or whatever your source is, but you can't hear that with a chatter mind. You have to, and that's what meditation is. It's slowing down, getting rid of all that buzzy, monkey mind chatter thought, and coming to that place of stillness within where you hear the voice of God. Because it says, you know, the voice of God is heard in the quiet mind, in the still voice. That's where you get that clarity, and it's a sense of knowing. I mean, that's how it works for me. That prayer mostly is, it's very much meditation. You don't see the word meditation in the Bible. You see the word prayer all the time. But when you go into the original languages, the Hebrew and the Greek, and you study those words, you begin to realize it was far, far, far more of a meditation than it was in a conversation of asking for things.
Well, and I have a daily practice of, at least I try, most days getting up before the sun comes up and doing my prayer, doing my meditation as the sun's coming up is when I'm really paying attention just to the sun and the appreciation. And a lot of times it's as simple as that, and I get answers to things for me. You know, yes, I have this gift that I can use for other people, but when it comes to my own personal practice and my own personal belief system and connection and a relationship with God, that is the time that I do it, is in the quiet stillness of the morning, because nobody else gets up that early in my house, thankfully, aside from my dogs. When people tell me, like, I don't have time for that, I think, nah, I used to think that, too, and I used to say that, too, and all it takes is getting up really early. And then, you know, the rest of your day is set, and everything then at that point is very possible. Abundance and health and vitality and peace and joy, all those things are possible because you set your day out to make that connection. And everything from that point forward is with that connection that you made. So it's kind of cool.
Great. Well, we're getting a little bit off topic for tonight, but I feel this is absolutely wonderful. Hey, tell me your thoughts again about what we talked about last night on your radio program. What do you see with this whole reval currency exchange? Because you're kind of new to this, so just share your thoughts on that.
Well, the way it came to me was really strange anyways, and probably the only way I would have ever found out about it. You know, I've been asking for different ways to make money, and not a little money, because I do fairly well with my business, but there's some things that I want to manifest, and it takes a chunk of money to make it happen. I've been asking, you know, and a psychic I did a reading for, and I asked me about investments, and in the reading, something came up about one of her investments paying off, and it was a specific one that she had made with a partner. And she contacted me a week later with the link to the Gaia website, and your name and your blog came off of that. So I read your article and asked her a couple questions and immediately felt, well, I should do this. I need to do this. And very peaceful about it, and that this was the answer to the questions I've been asking. At least, you know, the possibility is pretty big that it's the answer. So I jumped in. I don't understand it, honestly. Like I told you and the listeners last night, I'm not a finance person. And so I don't really understand the workings of it, but I understand the messages I'm getting enough to see the wisdom in doing it. It's not much of a risk. Literally, you know, I didn't hurt myself in investing. It's no more than I would blow in a night going out to eat.
Sure. Yeah. Well, it opens up a lot of doors for a lot of people. And it's, today on the Dinar Recaps blog site, there was a post by me. And today I realized she's been watching and following this stuff for 10 years. And when you look at one of her past posts, she basically said she was a private investigator. So she is... She's the professional in the field, I guess you would call it that. And so I've always probably given a little more credibility to her. And she basically is saying today, it's ready to go. She says, I've been following this for a long time, and it's never been this certain. And she's always been very cautious and protective about her comments. She doesn't go into this, oh, it's happening tonight, I'm 99% sure, yes, this is going to be it. Well, you know, if she doesn't, she doesn't go around and talking about stuff that she just plain doesn't know. And when she says something, it's because she believes in her sources. She trusts her sources. She's had long-term relationships with them. And she basically said, everything's done now. Part of it is what was called the Erbil Agreements. And Erbil is, I think it's a city in northern Iraq in the Kurdish region. So it was some government agreements, and she says, everything's done. And she's basically saying, anytime between now and the end of the month, and that's 8 days away. That's where we are. So it's and you know what I have noticed over the weekend, there just seemed to be a lot of confusion, a lot of just weird stuff going on. And part of it could have been, you know, what is called the loony moon. It was a full moon and a lunar eclipse on the same day. That affects a lot of stuff. I know I was off And then we started Mercury retrograde. What was it, yesterday or the day before? And so I think we're entering into a season of kind of quieting down, going within, reflecting on how mortal this is. And to me, that's a perfect time for its comfort. So we'll know more. Yeah, hopefully by next week it's going to, you know, next week I'm hoping I'm on this radio program and says, folks, you got your 800 numbers. Let's talk about your appointments.
Right.
That's what I hope to do. Yeah. Well, Bernadette, anything else you want to add to the program tonight? I'm really glad you came on the air. And again, I really enjoyed being with you last night.
No, I think your show is great and the information is really helpful to people, and I appreciate, you know, I appreciate the time you've had with me on, and hopefully, yeah, it is soon, and then you can come back on my show and we can have a good laugh.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah, so.
Yes.
Okay. Well, thanks for joining me tonight, and I'm sure you and I know we'll be back on and we'll have each other on again, so it'll be good. But right now I want to go on and I want to talk about what's called the crisis. Is this going to be a crisis? Is it a crisis transition or a peaceful transition? So thanks again, Bernadette. Have a great week.
Thanks, Dave. Good night.
Okay, good night. Mm-hmm. Folks, here's what I want to do. I want to get into the main topic of the program tonight. And then I'll go in and I'll start taking on some of your questions that you're going to be you're bringing up on the chat window. What in the world is going to happen? What is going to take place? In fact, I was in a conversation with a person just earlier. It was yesterday. And now I'm getting a little penny. You're saying that you can't understand me. Is that correct? And folks out there in the chat room, can you just give me a little message? Is this coming across okay, or is it scratchy? Or are things coming across okay? Bob and Maggot and some of the others out there in the chat room, would you just send me a quick little message that what's happening here? Is everything coming across okay? Penny, you're saying I'm coming across fuzzy. Maggot, you're saying I'm coming across perfect. All right. And Christine, you're saying sometimes okay, sometimes fuzzy. Okay, folks, I'll just do the best that I can. Sometimes it's an internet connection. I'm beginning to think that it might be my microphone. We'll just have to bear with it tonight, okay? But thank you. I appreciate that. I'll do the best that I can. I'll try to stay still. Sometimes that happens a little bit. So I had a person, it was yesterday, they said, is the U.S. dollar going to crash when this takes place, or what is it going to affect and what is it going to do? Well, folks, let me tell you, and I'm just going to tell you my experience, my opinion. This comes from 17 years of being a market trader, but I have to admit, I mean, this is one of those things, this is the road we've never been down before, so I can't really guarantee anything, and sometimes my opinion in $2 will get you a cup of coffee, and that's about how much it's worth. But here's what happens. The United States government is bankrupt. And the U.S. currency is the world's reserve currency. It affects every single country around the world. And so when we are on the brink of basically being in a position where we can't handle our financial affairs and we're only 1 or 2 days away from not being able to pay our bills, it creates concern, it creates worry, it creates uncertainty in the markets, not only in the United States, but all around the world. Now, this is an event that's going to dump trillions of dollars into countries and individuals all around the world, basically overnight. And there's been a media blackout on this event. They haven't been talking about it. So you can imagine when all of a sudden, you know, the people wake up the next morning and it's in the front page of the news. It says, well, there was just a global currency reset that took place and about 4 million people in America became millionaires overnight. It will create a shock to the market. Markets want certainty. They want to know that things are stable. When something that is uncertain, that is shocking, comes in that they're not certain about, creates fear. Sometimes it creates panic. And sometimes it creates people to say, I'm pulling my money out because I don't know what this is going to do. It will undoubtedly probably, when it's announced and happens, it's probably going to make the Dow drop 300 to 500 points within a few hours. Now, this is just my opinion. Right? It could be different. And once that happens, though, people are going to wake up and say, what in the world is going on? Now, remember, about 60% of the people in America have money in one way or another in the stock market. It's because their 401k retirement accounts are invested in the stock market. And when we went through the crash starting in September of 2008, that would have been, 5 years ago, the Dow dropped 53% in just five or six months. So in essence, some people were losing 20, 30, 40% of their investment portfolios in about 6 months. That created a lot of shock, created a lot of panic, created a lot of concern. Now, the market has come back very, very well since then, and it's surpassed what it was back there, and it's already, the Dow has already gone over 2,000 points past what was its all-time high back in 2008. And just this week, or was it Friday last week or earlier this week, the S&P set a new all-time high. But when it creates this shock situation that drops that much and it's an uncertain event, people will start to panic. Because it was painful last time when they lost all that money and they say, I don't want to do that again. And they'll pull their money out. And they said, I would rather hold it than lose a lot or even miss an upcoming opportunity in this period of uncertainty. And when they start pulling out, it creates a cascading event. Because people have certain what are called target points where they're going to pull out. And it falls down, it hits a target point, that creates it to go down more, hits another target point, creates it to go down more, and it's going to continue to drop until the dust settles. That's a very, very high probability. That creates what is called crisis mentality. It's chaos mentality, and it's not going to be with just us here in the United States, it's going to be all around the world. Also, there's a very high probability the U.S. dollar will drop because of the fact that we are so far in debt, it could go through a huge drop. But here's what I think is going to happen. Once the dust settles, I think the markets are going to come screaming back. Now, before I get into that, I want to talk a little more about crisis reaction to the situation. Remember, the bloggers are now beginning to tell us, you got to be quiet, don't talk about it. People are concerned that this may create some chaos, they're concerned it may create some rioting, they're concerned it may, you know, have people trying to find out, do you have it, and they're going to come steal it, and it's going to, you know, bring up the thievery within people and stuff like that. And we're supposed to sign this non-disclosure agreement so that we can keep it quiet. Now, you know my opinion on that. It's impossible. You can't keep this stuff quiet. But it is going to create a lot of doubt, a lot of questions, a lot of uncertainty. Now, though, yes, I think there's a probability a crisis can come our way. But there's something that's always interesting in the crisis. A crisis creates opportunity. The Chinese word for crisis, if you understand the Chinese language, it's symbols and characters. And the word for crisis is a combination of two characters. The character of great danger and the character of great opportunity. And that is potentially what could come our way. A great danger with also a real good great opportunity. That is potentially what we could have in this crisis. The positive side of the crisis is it wakes people up. You know, if you're settled into a really nice job, you make a really good, decent income, you're secure financially, you've got a wonderful retirement account, and everything is going to go fine, you're settled in. You're not really waking up to what's going on around you, probably not. These things don't affect you that much. You're not really all that concerned, can I pay rent or pay the house payment next month? But then all of a sudden, when your retirement account all of a sudden drops 30, 40, 50%, it's a shock. And in the shock, it's the great danger with the great opportunity. It wakes people up. This can be the one thing that could start waking up the population and starting to bring them to the point where they're starting to ask the questions, what's going on? And that they'll really start realizing that the world's financial situation was so unstable. It was insecure. That's the positive side of the crisis. That's the positive side of what can take place should a crisis develop. Now, why do I think the markets would come screaming back? There is going to be trillions of dollars pumped into the economic system countries all around the world. There are supposedly the United States government is going to get trillions of dollars. And they're going to use that to pay off our debt. They use that to pay off our debt. Our American dollar comes screaming back in its value because it's the debt, the deep debt that's weakening the American dollar. It will come screaming back. The stock markets will come screaming back. Why? Because there is going to be trillions of dollars pumped into the economy for us in America to spend. We are a consumer-based economy. We are people that our economy does well when the people have money to spend. It's another thing around the whole issue with China. Why does China want us to do well? China wants us to have money to spend because if we have money to spend, it's employing their people because we buy a lot of stuff made in China. Because stuff made in China is cheaper than what it's here in the United States. You know, it's like going out and getting an electric screwdriver. Made in China, it's $10. Made in the USA, it's $50. I know that's a little money off the wall, but I'm just using that as an illustration. You know, if stuff can be made cheaply in China, it's going to cost us 2, 3, 4 times as much if it's made here in the United States because of our cost of labor, the cost of, you know, it's just the cost of doing business. China wants us to have a lot of money because they want to be able to have their people be put to work. And they're going to have a lot of money, and they're going to get a lot of oil from Iraq. And that's what stops their growth and their development more than anything else is the cost of oil. So they want the oil. They want oil at a cheap cost more than they want money. There's going to be construction projects going on all around the world. You want to know where I believe that the markets are going to explode almost more than anywhere else? In Iraq. Iraq is a war-torn country. It has been devastated by war. It wants to rebuild, and it is going to have trillions of dollars pumping into its country to rebuild itself, to put those people back to work and rebuild that country. I can tell you right now, when my money comes through, if you ask where I would be investing money, I'm investing in ETFs in construction in Iraq. That's what I'm investing in. It's one of the first things that I will be looking for in the research of where I'd want to put some of my money for growth, for, you know, just what I call long-term growth stuff. So that's the crisis side. Now, what about should this happen in a peaceful side? There was something interesting that developed last week when the U.S. government took care of the budget situation. President Obama came out and said, "It isn't working, folks. We can't continue to do this. The system is broken. We have to change what we're doing on the global economic scale." Christine Lagarde, the president of the International Monetary Fund, came out and said, "The system is broken. United States, we can't continue to trust you. We can't let you continue to be jerking the rest of the world around when your financial affairs are so unstable. We have a broken system and we need to change." And she even used the term global currency reset. China did something in the last week. They have never done this. It's extremely rare. The leadership of China, twice in news articles on the mainstream media I read, they said, "United States, we can't trust you anymore. We don't want your U.S. dollar being used as the world's reserve currency. It isn't working. We can't trust you. We don't know if your leadership is going to step up to take care of your severe economic problems, i.e. your debt." Because, see, folks, all they did last year was, see, the United States is paying its bills by borrowing on credit cards. And the credit card had hit the limit. And all they did last week was up the limit of the credit card so they can spend more money to pay bills using the credit card. The debt is increasing. Now, do you think our leaders, though, don't know that? Yes, they do. If this reval does not happen within the next, I would say, 6, 8, 10 days, there is a possibility it could stretch out for a month or two. And this message that could start to take place and start to catch on, and multiple countries will start saying, we can't do this again. Because last week, they didn't fix the problem. All they did was kick the can down the road for 3 months. And they're going to face the same thing again in 3 months. So it is possible that this momentum could build. The media starts to pick up on it. They start talking about the need of a global currency reset. They start talking about the need to go back to asset-backed currencies. And if that message starts to pick up, then all it does is set the stage for the reset to take place in a peaceful fashion instead of a crisis and chaotic fashion. Now, those are the two options that are out there before us. Ask me which is one's going to happen. I really don't know. I can speculate. I think if the reset, the reval happens in the next 6 to 10 days, I think it's going to create a shock. If it doesn't happen within, it may very well stretch out, and then we would have the peaceful and orderly transition. There's pros and cons on both sides. There's a crisis doesn't feel good to a lot of people, but for you and I, we're in great shape because we're cashing in our dinar and dong. And in the process of those that are in the crisis that didn't happen, it begins to wake those folks up. That's the positive side. Then there's the positive side to the peaceful transition, because it's not creating chaos all around the world. Chaos is found in fear. And fear has huge dramatic repercussions. Fear is what the cabal has used to control the world for centuries, if not millennia, keeping the masses in fear through their power and control, through force or through money or through other various means. Fear has always been the biggest weapon. Fear and ignorance. Keep the people in fear and keep them in the dark, and then we can control them with our power. And that's what they've done. They've been doing that, as I said, for centuries. But this reval is the thing that has the ability to break their back. One of the other things people have been asking questions about is, gee, is this rate at $27, is that realistic? I don't think we're going to see $27 staying as an everyday normal trading rate of the Iraqi dinar. It very well could be we would have this for a 30-day window for that rate, and that's all that it's going to be. And yes, there is the trillions, thousands of trillions of dollars in gold under the trustee of the Dragon family in China to back this up. And they want lots of money out there, folks. They want lots and lots and lots of money into the hands and into the pockets and into the bank accounts of everyday people like you and me, because that's one of the ways they're going to break the cabal's back. If we have lots of money to spend, then they can't control us. They become powerless. They basically become neutered. That's the term that I want to use. They become neutered. They become kind of powerless. That's what I see developing. That's some of the stuff that I see that could be taking place. So I'm going to wrap that part of it up. I'm going to go to a caller here online. And folks, if you've got some questions and you're in the chat window, if you're online, go scroll down, open up the chat window. If you've got some questions, start sending them my way. And I'll be taking a look at those after we go to some of the callers. I'm going to go to one of the first callers here now, and I'm going to area code 514, Blair.
They want lots of money out there. They want lots and lots and lots of money into the hands. Hey,
Blair. Can you hear me? You got your speakers on there, Blair. Blair, I'm going to put you on hold for just a second. I'm going to go to some of the questions that are here in the chat room, and then I'll come back to you. But I need you to turn your speakers off.
That's some of the stuff that I see.
Okay, let's take a look here. One of the questions says here on the chat room, it says, how will the reval create more of a level playing field and significantly redistribute wealth if the super wealthy have bought large amounts of dinar, dong, etc., especially since some of them have cashed out and can now double dip? I don't know about the double dipping. It's all perspective. It's all perspective. Here's the reality is, if they have the money and we don't have any, then they're in control. But when we, the masses, have just as much as what they have, they've lost their power and their control. For the extremely wealthy, it's not about how much money they have. When you have $1 billion, how many more billion do you need? That's not what motivates them. That's not what drives them. What drives them and motivates them is their ability to have power and control, to be able to it's almost an addictive type of a power of what it is. They don't need money to buy more shoes, more cars, more vacations, more trips. You know, they either have one or two things. They want to have more money than the guy that they're competing with, and they want to control the rest of us. But it diffuses that control is what it does, and that's how I see it. And and there's getting to be a pretty big backlash that had come across them, you know, as well from on some of the concerns on that. So, you know, folks, it isn't going to solve everything, and not everything is going to go exactly the way that we want it. What I would say is focus on you, on what you want to do. Stay positive. If you allow your monkey mind thoughts to go on into everybody else is getting wealthy and I'm not getting mine, and I'm going to come back, and there's a comment that I use that says, you're tripping over pennies on your way to dollars. Focus on you, what your mission, what your purpose is, how you want to help other people, and what you want to do, and let those folks have their stuff. They will reap what they sow, just as you and I do. Just because they have more money, if we become focused in thinking importance and worth and value is based on how much money you have, then we keep holding them in that position. If we come to the point of understanding that, no, it's about what we can do for each other and how we can help each other, and we and the masses are doing that, it begins to change the whole situation. So I hope that helped. He continued on and says, wouldn't that mean that the rich just get richer disproportionately to the rest of us? TNT Tony seems to think that nothing will essentially change in this respect and that the privileged will remain the privileged and powerful. I don't think so. I talked about that last night on the show with Bernadette. Folks, this is called the changing of the guard, if I want to use that term. We're moving into a new era. We have the opportunity to step up and show how we will use our wealth, and it will be different from those in the past. And in how we use our wealth, we start giving our money away. Guess what? It puts them to shame. It really begins to put them to shame because they've got this billion. When you focus inward, when you only focus on you and what you want, and when you become very inwardly focused, then you open the door for the extreme wealthy to control. If we open up, move into places of love, move into places of care, move into places of giving, move into places of benevolence, it changes the world. It's hard to understand sometimes, but in essence, our fear is what feeds them to keep doing what they're doing. When we move out of our fear and we move into joy, we begin to change the world. Now, TNT Tony is going to do what he wants to do. I'm thankful for what he does. I just don't see it the same way he sees it. I see this as a divine intervention. Have you stopped to think about that only 1% of the world's population, in the country here in the United States, is involved in this? And do you think that you were just lucky and it was just coincidence that you were one to be involved in this? I don't think so. When I read the blog sites, the vast majority of the people are going to be giving a lot of their money away and helping others. We're out to reset the paradigm, to set a new momentum and a new direction of where things are going. And I believe it's a divinely inspired event because we as a human race, in our growth, in our spiritual development, in our cognitive development with each other, we're changing. Instead of holding back in fear, we're beginning to ask questions. What's going on? I don't like this world I'm living in. I want to see a better world. And when we step up collectively, that's when that will happen. If you don't think that, then that's your choice. But that's not how I see it. And I know there are literally thousands and thousands and thousands of others see the same way that I do. But if you want to stay in your fear, you can stay in your fear. Yes, there will be some who will hoard their money. Of course there will be. There will be some that will continue to want to live in what's called an old paradigm. They will continue to live in the old way. And I think, folks, they'll reap what they sow. I think this is divine intervention money. This is money that is being meant to be sent out there and to be spread and to let it increase. It's the whole principle of planting the seed. You plant the seed and it grows and it spreads and it grows and it spreads and it grows and it spreads. There's no limit on money. If you think there's a limit on money, then you've limited your perspective of how you view the world. Money begets money. Money creates money. Even from a pure fiscal standpoint, it's called the rollover factor. More money will basically breed more money is what it will do. It will send more money out there. So, folks, those are some of the questions that I've had up here in the chat room. I know I'm seeing that there's about 80 of you out there. If you have some other questions, I know I hadn't been doing this before. I am saying this is I'm doing this new tonight. If you've got some specific questions, tap in. Scroll down on the window, on the blog window, down to the bottom. You'll see the chat area that is there. And it's there that you can open up the chat room, and you should be logged in and type in your question. You go down to the very bottom. That's where you type your question in. You want to send some questions here, you know, my way. Okay, now I'm going to try going back to Blair. Blair in Montreal. I hope you're still there. I hope you're still listening. What I need you to do, bud, is make sure you turn off your speakers in the background because otherwise we get feedback. So, Blair,
no problem,
you
Steve.
Blair?
Hello?
Are you there, bud? Yeah, there we are.
Yes,
okay.
I am. Hello?
Okay, I hear you.
Great. Steve, Dave, I want to thank you very much for having me on the show. And again, as always, you do an absolutely phenomenal, beautiful job. Thank you very, very much for everything that you do.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure. For me, it just comes easy because it's what I love to do. So, yeah. But go ahead. What do you got for us? I know you
Well, a few things I'd like to share. First off, I would like to thank that gentleman from last week. I think he was your second-to-last caller. He was part of the Desert Storm group, if you recall, and was mentioning how when Kuwaiti's money revolt, it happened almost overnight, and almost nobody knew about it.
Yes, that's when the Kuwaiti dinar revalued. And let me give a minute just to explain that to folks. We've had this happen before. It was in 1990 when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait, and I think it was in August. He basically stripped all the banks in Kuwait of their money, looted all the banks, took all the Kuwaiti dinar. And what happened is the United Nations stepped in and immediately devalued the Kuwaiti dinar because Saddam was basically going to use that money to go buy more weaponry for the war. When the Kuwaiti dinar was revalued, he basically lost and became worthless. The United Nations stepped in January, and it basically took 3 weeks to drive Saddam out of Kuwait and then to allow the Kuwaiti government to be restored. And I think it was in March that the dinar, Kuwaiti dinar, was revalued. It was right around 3.45. It dropped to 6 cents, and then overnight it came back. It actually happened. Now, the issue was there was, at that time, hardly anybody knew about it. You had to go to Kuwait to get some dinar, and it wasn't being publicized. Hardly anybody knew about it. And if you had some, you had to travel to Kuwait to basically exchange it.
Right.
So the opportunity was very, very small. So there was only a small amount of people that it happened, but those folks became overnight millionaires. And that's about ready to happen again, but this time it's been going on for 10 years, and there's millions of people involved in it. Is that how you see it, Blair?
Absolutely. There's going to be a lot more millionaires this time around. And as was said previously on previous shows, I really, really do believe, Dave, that we are the new 1%, because this new 1%, we are more or less, we want to help. We want to spread this wealth. This is not about hoarding. This is not about look at me, look at me. This is about sharing with your neighbor. This is about helping people. And as you said, money begets money. Now, one thing I'd like to mention, the woman that you had on earlier was talking about praying and what have you, and it just hit me. You know, like most people out there, we all pray for wealth in one way or another. And often not, I found myself praying, oh, God, I wish I could win the lottery. I wish I could win that jackpot or this jackpot or that jackpot. And I got into a routine of every time when the jackpots get big, I said, oh, my God, okay, maybe this is it. Maybe I'll win it this time. And then one day I just started meditating. And all the noise was gone. It was just me in my brain, if you know what I mean. And I asked a question, very straightforward. I said, can I win this lottery? And the message came back, Dave, as clear as a bell. No, this is not the way you will have the wealth. And every time I meditated, that same clear voice came, no, this is not the wealth. This is not how you're going to get your wealth. And I didn't understand. I was very frustrated. Lo and behold, now I understand.
Yeah. It's quite different, isn't it? You know, it's funny.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now, just a couple other things so you can go to your next caller. I just wanted to mention for the Canadian listeners out there, I call the currency exchange here in Montreal that I deal with, and I had a long discussion with one of the managers, and I told him, was he aware about the reval? He said he was aware about it. He's been hearing a lot about it. He's a little skeptical. But he says, if that happens, he says, you're going to have to take off the three zeros. And I said, of course you're going to take off the three zeros. But, however, there is going to be a period of time, perhaps 30 days, perhaps 60, we don't know, where we'll be able to trade in those diners and dongs before the three zeros are removed. But he did say this. He said, if the diners revalved and or the dong and other currencies, I asked him, I said, let's say for sake of argument, if the dong or and the diner revolves to just $3, argument's sake. I have a $25,000 dinar bill. If I come to your exchange with this, it's now worth $75,000. Now, I'm hearing that I can't take up more than $5,000 at a time. He says, no. If the reval goes through and you come with that one $25,000 note, I will give you $75,000 cash. I don't recommend it, but if you were to call me and say, hey, you would like to have $75,000, I can have it here for you. Or I can cut you a check for that amount. So when I heard that, Dave, it was like, wow, that really changes everything. Now, I don't know how the currency exchanges work in the States, but here in Montreal and probably rest throughout Canada, that's the way they would operate. So if this man is telling me this, who is the manager at this currency exchange, that's really phenomenal news. Now, obviously, there's tax implications. I will deal with that later. But the point is, I can go in with my $125,000 note or a couple of $5,000 bills of dong, and just have some quick working capital. Because obviously, I'm sure a lot of people will want to just have a little bit of working capital and then, you know, bring in the mother load, so to speak, later on down the road with their bank, as opposed to bringing the mother load to a currency exchange.
Yep. I think what we can expect is that, you know, this doesn't have to be hard. It's just nothing more than a simple cash-for-cash transaction. Now, when I use cash, I use currency, cashier's checks, and deposits into your bank accounts all under the same. They're all just different forms of cash is what they are. But that's all that it is. It's just a cash-for-cash exchange. And you go in there, they're going to give you some currency. I don't think they're going to give you a lot. They're going to limit it because, number one, they're going to get rushed and they're going to have a ton on hand. And number two, it's just not really safe for you to walk out the bank with $100,000 cash in your hand. They'll give you cashier's check. They'll put the money in your account. And a lot of banks will give to you what is called a special black debit card. These are the cards. Now, that's just called, it's just a nickname called the black card. But that's what most of them do. That's the color that they use. It signifies that it's a debit card that has a ton of money in it, and it has an unrestricted use to it, and it doesn't have the normal transaction fees that normal debit cards have. It's a, instead of going and writing a check for a brand new house or a brand new card, you can use this debit card to buy a house or to basically buy a car, and it will allow the large dollar transaction. You have been cleared for transactions up to a certain dollar amount using that card. And so they'll probably give you one of those, you know, higher-end debit cards. They'll put money in your account, and they'll give you cashier's checks if you want that, and they'll give you some cash. But that's all
that is. That would be great. That is definitely great. That's great news to hear. One other little quick note. I also, once again, contacted the head office of a certain bank in Toronto and was again transferred to their precious metals and currency division. And I spoke to the young lady who I spoke to a number of times and gave her a quick education. And after, you know, explaining about the dinar, how and why it's revaluing, et cetera, as well as the dong and the fact that the Iraqi government has oil and that they have gold and how Vietnam has rice, has gold and oil, she said to me, you know, Blair, you're the first person that's really explained it to me. I really appreciate it, and I understand so, so much more. And she said, you know what? If you get your data before me, that's great, but if I get it before you, I will call you and let you know that we do have the information from Bank of America, because Blair, that's what we're waiting for, she told me. Blair, we're just waiting for information from Bank of America. Once we have that data, then you and anyone else in Toronto, Montreal, whatever, can come down and, you know, trade in your currencies. But I did also ask her, I said, what about this thing? Now, I've heard it a few times, and I'm still not sure. Do you know anything about this, how we have to, for example, I had bought 3 million dong, 1 million for myself and a couple of million for other friends of mine. I have the original receipt. Do they require a receipt if they come to the bank and want to exchange the money? Now, if I come to the bank with $1,000 American, you're not going to ask me, where did I buy my American money? It's money for money. No. She said, yes, I agree and I understand, but this is a special situation. So I'm recommending to you, Blair, hold on to your receipt.
Well, you should hold on to your receipts for tax reasons. For tax reasons, you should hold on your receipts. But when you take cash into a bank, the bank doesn't really care where you got it. As long as they know that is a cash currency that is viable and it's not counterfeit, they can tell us where you got it, because cash is cash. Cash goes to the bearer, in the hands of the bearer. If you walk in with $10 million dong or $10 million of cash currency in the U.S., they don't really care. Now, you will have to fill out a FinCEN report. You know, because if it's U.S. currency, they're going to say, where did you get all this money? It's not the bank who wants to know. It's the government that wants to know, because they want to make sure that you're not basically, you know, money laundering, or you're basically selling drugs and stuff like that.
Understood.
And they're looking for that when they have huge cash transactions. But if the reval takes place, you're not going to be the loaner coming in with dinar and dong. There's going to be scores and scores and scores of other people as well. So it's going to be a common occurrence, and they're going to be able to know, okay, yeah, this is Vietnamese dong, yeah, this is Iraqi currency, we're good to go, let's exchange it. It's that simple. Don't make this be more complicated than what it is. So,
agreed.
People are just making this out to be so complicated that it might be something different than what it is, and it's not. Unless, now, could a bank, each individual bank, have a couple few little small things that they might want to implement for their own administrative reasons? Yeah, they could, but for the most part, you're just simply going and exchanging money from one country to another. That's all that you're doing.
Okay, now for tax purposes, example, say my neighbor who I bought $500,000, he doesn't have a receipt. How does that work for him in tax purposes if I have the original receipt, unless I give him a copy of it and sign stating that, you know, he has X amount from this whole amount on this receipt? This is where I'm a little unsure. In fact, what I was thinking of doing is consulting a tax lawyer on that, a tax attorney.
Yeah. You know, a normal currency transaction is receipts are not involved. That is a normal currency transaction. If you were to take an English pound and go into a bank here in America and exchange an English pound for American dollars, they aren't asking for your receipt. The only thing that's different is the amount. So you could take Vietnamese dong today and take it into a bank and exchange it, they're not going to ask for your receipts. They're going to give you what the current exchange rate is, and they're going to give it to you in the equivalent of American dollars. That's what you're going to do.
Yeah.
So now, if it makes you feel more comfortable, then fine, then do it. But that is not normal banking operating procedures. It's just not. So, yeah. Okay?
Got you. Thank you very much, Steve. Steve, thank you again for having me on your show. Again, you do phenomenal work, and have yourself a good evening, and namaste to you.
Thanks, Blair. Appreciate it. Okay. Good night, buddy. Yeah. Okay.
Good night.
Okay. I'm going to take on one of the questions here on the chat window. The guy is asking, where can we research black debit cards? Google it. That's all I know. Now, it's not something that is exact. It's not something that is of law. It's just a tradition that banks use. If you have a black American Express card, you're on the high end. If you have a black Visa card, you're on the high end. If you have a black MasterCard, you're on the high end. It's a tradition is what it is. And it's a practice that some of the banks use. There is nothing in law that is about it. They can give you a pink debit card if they want to. It's the bank's policy. It's their own in-bank policy. But traditionally, if they're giving you one of these black debit cards, it's traditionally considered to be a high-end debit card for the account. Okay. Now, another one says that TNT Tony says he is planning on to exchange a certain amount of his dinar dong for accounts and currencies other than the dollar, which he expects to gain in value in the post-reval period. What are your thoughts on that? Speculation. It's what it is. If you want to take your dinar and trade it in for the British pound or the Japanese yen and thinking that it's going to go up, that's a speculation issue. That's a foreign currency trading issue. It could work. But I would say you want to know what you're doing. You want to know what's going on. He may be thinking, see, when the reval happens, most of them are saying that most of us are going to be in and out in 3 to 5 days and have our money exchanged. Most of us will. And they're also saying there's going to be the 30-day window. We don't know. It's all speculation, but that's what they're reporting. But it's going to be, they're going to go and exchange your money. If Tony wants to do that, that's a personal choice issue. And now the second part of this, the guy's asking, what currencies is he like referring to? I've read that the Chinese yuan, Indian rupee, and Canadian dollar are expected to rise. They might. I am a market trader. I am not a foreign currency exchange trader. I don't understand it as well. So if anything that I'm saying, I'm not coming from a place of a professional. I'm coming from a place where I'm just shooting from the hip. It's just my thought, my hunch. My feeling about what I think it might be. It's really hard to say on this because this is a road we've never been down before. There's never been anything like this before. So how is it going to affect? Personally, I think most of the currencies in the world will go through some shift and change because it's based on the assets that they have. But that's when it's going to be supposedly that all going to be done at the same time, and all at once they're going to throw the switch and all the currencies of the world are going to be reset. And the only way beyond that, any foreign exchange and currency, you're just becoming a foreign exchange trader based on speculation. That's all that you're doing. So if Tony says he wants to do it, he's probably wanting to go out and play the market. That's the only thing I can think of. So, okay, I'm going to go to another caller, and I'm going to a caller with the area code 425, which is my old stomping ground. It's the North Seattle suburbs. And I'm going to Don, who has a Seattle bank story. Don, welcome on the air tonight.
Hi, Dave. Thank you. I know you probably remember me emailing me and giving me the Anderson Group and all that kind of stuff, which I have consulted. But I wanted to tell you, I went in to a Wells Fargo bank. I made an appointment with a wealth manager, financial advisor, because I wanted to just ask some questions, kind of educate myself, kind of get a plan, you know what I mean? And sat down with the guy, nice enough and everything. I tried to be a little vague at first, but after getting some information and him kind of keep asking me, well, where is this money coming from? I finally told him. And he was unaware of any of it happening. In fact, he showed me on his computer what was coming down from the top of Wells Fargo, and that is, he showed me all the way back to March, all the articles and stuff that was coming down for them to be aware of anyone trying to come in to buy dinar, that it was a scam, it was fraud alert, and all the way up to that time, he was showing me all the way through. He turned around his computer and showed me. And, I mean, huge headlines of fraud alert. And then toward the end of our conversation, he said, well, you know, I really can't help you until you have the money. He told me that the fraud alert was anybody coming in to open up an account with a dinar, they were to call immediately. I thought that was, I said, well, you know, this is what they've been portraying to keep you guys in the dark, you know, to portray that this is a scam, and that's why a lot of people are going to be mad, you know, when they find out it was not a scam. What do you think about all that, Dave?
Well, I discussed some of that in one of the recent newsletters that I did about a week and a half to 2 weeks ago, where I talked about the 800 number of bank relations. Banks are kind of caught in a catch-22. Well, first of all, you can't take dinar in today to a bank because dinar is not traded on the open foreign exchange. It is not a tradable currency today. You can't take it in any bank and do any transactions with it. And it has to come back onto the foreign exchange market before you can do anything with the dinar. Okay. Secondly, remember, when Wells Fargo, from our perspective, we're not dealing with Wells Fargo at the branches. We're dealing with Wells Fargo in a private exchange with basically outside of the branch employees. Thirdly, to a certain degree, you have to keep playing with the word, because if the word got out that they were saying, yes, it was real, they'd lose all their employees. And I talk about that in my newsletter. I says, imagine if you're just an everyday teller and it comes down from the top that this global currency reset is going to take place and you can buy some dinar or dong and you can become a millionaire overnight. Well, if I'm a bank teller, a lowly paid bank teller, and I'm hearing this coming from the top, I'm buying a ton of dong and dinar. And I'm walking off the job after I've exchanged it. You see, they would lose half their employees. So they have to be really careful. And so they can't right come out and say it. Now, I do get reports of people going into the banks, and some of the banks are really honest with them, you know, and they're just telling them the truth. It's, yeah, we think it's going to happen. We can't do anything for you right now because we're not in a position to do anything for you, and we can't do anything to you until it happens, you know. And, yeah, you can set up an account that you can put the money into after the exchange takes place, but I can't, you know, do any dong for you or dinar for you. Well, yeah, you could do dong. It's $21,000 for one U.S. dollar, you know. So banks are between a rock and a hard spot. And the reports that we're getting, they're just all over the map. The vast majority of them at the branch level, or even sometimes at the management levels in the regions, they won't admit it. And it's like, okay. You know, Don, and I also say this to Blair. Blair, you're still listening. When you walk into those guys, if they don't believe it, take in a copy of my 8-page Q&A and say, hey, read this. That's what's turning people around, because it makes common sense. It's giving them information they've never had before, because they get so much stuff about calling it scam, 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 that they never take the time to logically think it through and read something about, like, what I wrote. Now, there's others that have written stuff like that as well, but it makes what I do is lay it out in a practical, common sense package and picture. It says, this is why it's going to happen. It's common sense Iraq's currency is going to revalue. It's common sense. Not a question if, it's only a matter of when and what is the rate going to be. When you get down to the bottom line. Other than that, they're staying in a country that's in utter poverty, war-torn chaos country. And again, it's like what their prime minister said some months back. We've got billions and billions and billions of barrels of oil to sell, and we don't even have running water. They want to rebuild their country. They've got to get their currency back on the market to do that. So they want to do it. They're more anxious to do it than we are. And so it's just a matter of when. So Hey, Don.
Yeah, I want to thank you for that Q&A because that has turned some people around and made them realize that this was, you know, the door to open to help them. And a lot of these people are in dire need. And so I want to thank you for that.
Well, yeah, you know, it was just, it came, that article, it was just one of those inspired moments. And, but, you know, if you go into a bank, if you're going to go to talk to somebody, print up some copies of it and take it with you. And they say, hey, read this. And because it's in Q&A format, they don't have to read everything. They can, you know, go to the area that, that's most, that, that they would like to go to the most. So, you know, it's common sense. So, hey, now I want to ask you a question.
Yeah.
Area code 425 with the prefix 672, that's Linwood Edmonds. Where do you live at?
Yes, I live in Montlake Terrace, right near the Ballinger Golf Course on Lakeview Drive. It's near the Nile.
I know exactly where you are, my dear. I lived in Edmonds just a little over a year ago. I just moved here to Sedona a year ago from Edmonds. I was walking distance from your house.
Oh, wow. Oh, that is so interesting.
I lived over in the Five Corners area of Edmonds for about 2 years before I moved here. And then prior to that, I lived up in the Mill Creek area for about, 28 years.
Oh, my gosh. So, that's fantastic.
Neighbors, my dear.
Well, you wouldn't hardly recognize the Green Lake.
Yeah, I know they've totally redone the park and the golf course there. So that's what I've seen.
Well, no, the Green Lake, there's huge structures that have been going up, of course, all over, even in Lake Washington. I mean, they're going crazy. They're absolutely going crazy here. I don't know what's going to happen, but I think it's because of Amazon. They were hiring 5,000 people.
Yeah, they've been going through some huge expansion. I saw that.
What's happening. They're building everywhere. Anyways, I don't know if you miss Seattle or not. You probably like it in Sedona much better.
Well, this is home for me now. I love it here. I lived up in Snohomish County for over 30 years, and I was ready for a change.
Absolutely. We've had a lot of gray, you know, foggy every morning lately. So you're in a much better place.
I saw that. You guys are all in 24 hours a day of fog for a couple of days. So.
I can imagine. Well, thank you so much for everything you're doing. I've just been following everything. So thank you. And I email it to anybody I think that might not be on your email list.
Okay. Well, thanks. Thanks, Don. Appreciate your calling.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Good night. Well, ironically, I'm going to go on to another caller, and he's from the same area code. Area code 425. I've had back-to-back 425 area codes, and it's Carl. And Carl is calling. He put it in from Seattle. Carl, how are you? 425 is not Seattle.
That's the east side, Dave. We're in Woodinville here, actually.
Yeah, it's only when we're neighbors do we notice the difference. What can I help you with, Carl?
Well, Dave, I'm a little confused on this. We've been hearing a lot about this redenomination, that is to say where they want to drop the zeros. So on the currency. Now, let me figure this out. If I have a 25,000 dinar note, and let's say that the exchange rate is, I don't care, $3 or $27, let's say it's $10. With my 25,000 dinars, I would get at $10 exchange rate, I would get 2,000,005 or 250,000. I'm sorry, my math is a little weak. However, if we're talking about dropping the zeros, this is what confuses me. Are we saying that my 25,000 dinar note is now worth 25 dinar? And I'm only going to get $250? What's this all about?
Okay, there's two different theories that are out there on the dropping the zeros. Some people are saying that the zeros are going to be dropped before the reval. They are in the minority camp. There's only a very small part of them that are saying that. there is a very high probability the zeros will be dropped after the reval has taken place and after we have done our exchange. I can be wrong, but I don't see that dropping the zeros taking place before the RV, because it totally negates Iraq's position of wanting, trillions of dinars coming into their country, and the win-win-win situation that gets passed all the way around, when the source of the money, where most of this money is coming from, is out of China. It negates China's ability to take their dinar and buy oil at $30 a barrel. Now, Carl, if you go back, if you read my Q&A, remember, there's two things that are backing all this up. One is called, it's China doing the oil broker deal with Iraq, because China wants oil. But they have to purchase that oil with dinar currency. So China wants that exchange up as high as possible. They want it at 25,000, not at 250. Iraq wants it at 25,000 because they've now got more dinar back in country to use to on the open market to bring construction into it. It totally depletes the purpose of having this whole reval make any sense, to get as much money out there as possible to spread money all around the world to basically improve the world's economy all around the world. If they delete the three zeros beforehand and we only get a small amount, it's totally defeated the purpose. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does. And it would be, like I say, it would be, if you had a $25,000 dinar note, I mean, you're talking 25,000 versus 25. That's a hell of a difference, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it doesn't make sense why the U.S. government will go out and purchase trillions of dinar if it's only going to be at 25. Now, I think there's a very strong probability, and this is just my theory, how I see it, that we're probably going to be given that 30-day window to exchange all this dinar, and we're going to get the high rate for 30 days because it's to pump money out there into the world. And then I think what's going to happen...
Before they drop the three zeros, you're saying, that would make sense,
I think at the end of the 30 days, they may at that point, that's when they might flip it over and delete the zeros. And then the dinar will go back to what's called a nominal trading rate, which is very close to that of Kuwait's. Because it all comes back to who's putting up the money for the exchange. The people who are believing the theory that you delete the three zeros before the RV, they don't believe that China has trillions of dollars to make these oil credit exchanges, and they don't believe in the thousands of trillions of dollars of gold that's coming out of the Dragon Camel in China. So they don't see that, so they think that there's nothing here to pay for this type of exchange. So therefore, the rate has to be very, very low. It just doesn't make sense, because in 1990, at that time, the exchange rate was 3.47. One dinar would get you $3.47 in 1990. And Iraq's worth a whole lot more money today than it was in 1990. So,
okay. Thank you, Dave. Understand.
Anything else I can help you with?
No, that's fine. That's a question that was concerning me, and I think your explanation is a good one.
Thanks. I appreciate that. So much of it is still speculation. We just don't know, but those are the different theories that are out there. And those that are feeling the dropping the zeros before the RV, they're in a very small minority that believe that. So, thanks for calling, Carl. Have a good evening.
Okay, thank you, Dave. Good night.
Okay, good night. You know, folks, when you read the blog sites, I know sometimes it can be really confusing. There's a lot of different people out there. They have a lot of different opinions, and it's all over the map, and they say a lot of different things. Some of them are very reasonable to me. Some of them are just plain stupid because they're not thinking through what they're saying. But, when something like this comes up in our lives, it really, we haven't been down this road before. We're stepping into an arena we've never been in before. And when you take something that's going on in your life and you're stepping into an arena that you've never been in before, yeah, there's confusion, there's chaos, there's questions, and stupid things come up. People say stupid things that don't make sense. But, you know, and you just basically have to let them work that through is what you have to do, and you have to let them process that. But what I do when I read the blog site, I scan it, and I just say, is this relevant to me? And if it's not, I just let it go, because I don't want to get caught up into the monkey mind chatter, and I don't want to get caught up into what I call those that are based in fear. I just don't want to go there. It doesn't serve anything, and all it does is just create anxiety within me. So I just let all that stuff go, and I just say, well, that's where they are. There are, when it comes to the exchange, banks operate under a due process, an orderly process in conjunction with the law. And they're not going to go around and start operating out of the context of the law and doing all kinds of weird, stupid stuff. Now, for the most part, this is simply a cash for cash exchange. Remember, what I say cash, it could be in the form of currency, a cashier's check, or money in your bank account. It's a cash for check, cash exchange. And yeah, they might come up with a few different things just because of the amount of money and also the number of people that are doing it. They may have to do some inner administrative policies. But folks, nothing in the law has changed. I've heard people say, well, this law has changed, that law has changed. I had a guy email me last week and says, this law changed. They changed the tax laws right here. It didn't change. It wasn't even a law. He didn't know how to read a bill report. It was nothing more than an individual member of Congress dropping a bill back in January, and it never had a hearing. It never got voted on, and it never went anywhere. So people, they get caught up into stuff, and they say things, or they read stuff into it, and they don't know what they're talking about. And I hopefully this can be a place, you know, where I can be the voice of reason, and I can help you through with most of this stuff. But when it comes down to a lot of stuff, go within. Stop. Come to that place of that quiet mind, that place where you can hear the voice of reason within yourself. And think this through and say, well, what does this mean to me? How does this affect me? Is this important for me? Or am I just getting too caught up into something I really don't have to worry about? You're the one who's in control. When you go into the bank, all this money, remember, you're the king, you're the queen. It's your money. They are in the customer service business, and they are here to serve you. You stay in control. What's best for you to do is before you go into the bank, sit down and write down a list of questions that you would have for them. Ask the questions that are important for you. Before you exchange this money, sit down and decide what is it that you want to do with your money. Some of the questions, the emails that I get, people will go email me and say, should I buy some more dinar? Should I buy some more dong? I can't tell you that. Everybody's situation is different. But here's what I do say. Sit down and ask yourself, plan out basically a proposed budget. How much money do you need? How much money do you need to pay off your debts, all your debts completely? How much money do you want to give away to your family, to your kids and friends and stuff like that? How much are you going to have to pay in taxes? What kind of vacations do you want to take? How much money do you want to put into your retirement funds? And ask yourself, how much do I need? What do I need to be happy? What do I need to be comfortable? What do I need to be able to experience the joy of giving money away? Who do I want to give money to? What nonprofit groups or organizations do I want to support? And why? If you do that for yourself and go through do a proposed budget, ask what it is that you want, how much do you need, then you've settled a lot of the chatter, the monkey mind chatter in your mind. Then, when you go into the bank, have a list of questions you want to ask the banker. Have a list of questions you want to ask them when you call for the 800 number. Now, you may not be able to do a lot of questions. They may be there just to get you in and out. You may say that's a question you have to ask is for your banker. And you may go into the bank and they're only going to do an exchange, and then they're going to set you up with another, what is called a personal banker, for all your other stuff. That may come later, but have a list of questions. And remember, it's your money. You're in control. Be in control. Don't let somebody else boss you around, tell you what you need to do. There was stuff on the blog site today saying, you know, cancel your phone, go get one of these new, you know, one-time use phones, get rid of your email, change your address, and use a, you know, use a pseudonym, and the list just went on and on and on and on. Most of that stuff is based in fear. The most important thing, if it's important to you, then do it. But don't let fear of the unknown dictate what you're doing. Educate yourself. Be prepared. And when the RV does take place, and if you're ready to quit your job, maybe you want to continue your job because you love your job. Maybe you're in a position you can quit your job. Be willing to start investing, going to seminars and workshops of wealth management, how to manage your money, how to protect your money, how to make the best use of it. What are the different trust accounts that you might want to have? Should I set up an LLC or a subchapter S corporation? Am I going to want to do this as a business, etc.? You want to do all that stuff. Start doing some of that now. I had a lady I was in an email with today, and she said, what should I do? And for those of you that have watched my YouTube videos, I recommend if you don't know what to do, the very first thing to do is just go set up an LLC account. Now, when you talk to a CPA and a lawyer and a banker, they say you got to have a business. Well, when you have over $1 million, your business is you're investing the money. A business is taking the assets within the business and making money off those assets. You're going to have $1 million you can put into mutual funds, you know, stocks, bonds, or whatever, and it's making you money. That can be your business. That's a legitimate business to do that. Go take a seminar on how to do it. Then the seminar is a tax write-off. Your travel for these purposes becomes tax write-off. Small businesses have cars? Yes, they do. Your car becomes a tax write-off. These are the different things that you can get to do. Minimally set up an LLC because it protects your money. What is an LLC? Limited liability company. You're limiting the liability of your money. You're limiting the liability of what somebody could come after for you. Minimally, that's what you want to do. Some people want to do subchapter S corporations because that's really great if you want to spread it around in your family. Trusts are an excellent vehicle to use. Now, what we are going to, and so this is what I told the lady today. Go set up an LLC and have your bank account open for the LLC. And when the reval money comes in, put it into that account. Then look at opening up a couple other bank accounts and do it in another bank. It's a wide, when you have that much money, it's just good, prudent business to spread your money around. Don't get stuck that everything is in one place and you end up having a bad relationship with them. Spread it around because now it gives you the ability to negotiate. You can negotiate one bank's business and what they have to offer with another bank's business. You're the king. You're in charge. You're in the ability. You're in the driver's seat for negotiating. Personally, what I have 3 different bank accounts and 2 brokerage accounts. That's what I have. And I will spread my money out amongst those 5 different sources is what I will do. Then you're also in a position to give some of the money away to nonprofits. You're also in a position to let the money be working for you that you're going to have to pay on taxes because you normally won't have to pay your taxes right up front. Your taxes will be paid either on the quarterly basis or on your April filing of April of next year. So you have the ability to keep that money. Plan on 45 to 50% for your taxes, folks. Just plan on it. That is the current law. I know there's writing about the 11% and stuff like that, but I'm sorry. I haven't seen it in law. I haven't seen Congress. I haven't seen a bill. I haven't seen Congress pass anything. And there is case history, they can't pass a tax retroactively upon us once you have the money. There are some forms of a retroactive but it was because it was we're now going to make this a 50% tax on the reval that you did 3 months ago. No, they can't do that. And besides, the government's going to get a ton of money out of this because governments are going to get 45 to 50% of everything that we're going to get. That's where it's going to go. And that's why, again, why you're going to see, I think, the stock markets take off, because governments are going to have money to spend now that they didn't have money to spend before. They're going to have money to do infrastructure improvements they didn't have before. They're going to have money to put people to work. And all that becomes what is called the rollover factor, how all that works. So, but minimally set up an LLC. Do that minimally. Then from there, spread your money out from different bank accounts. And then start the process of re-educating yourself. Now, some of you, I've mentioned this in some of the emails. We are tentatively planning on having a seminar here in Sedona. It will go on for about 3 days, 3 or 4 days. And we are going to bring in professional people. We're going to bring in professional money managers, financial planners, CPAs, tax attorneys, people who can assist you in various and answering your questions. We're going to bring those folks in and put on different workshops that will be available to you. We'll have some different speakers, and folks, I'll be there too. I love it. I love to do that stuff. And we would love to have you come to Sedona. Sedona is a vacation city. Now, this area is only around 20,000 people, but we receive over 4 million visitors a year. And so we're looking at doing that 2 to 3 months after the reval happens. Why? Well, first of all, take that longest to plan a seminar. Secondly is, when you get your money, you're going to take your first week or two and you're going to get your house in order and pay off your bills, and you're going to go on a vacation. You better. You should. You've earned it. You've deserved it. So that's do things differently with their money than what the rest of us do. So that's what's really important. So folks, those are the things that I see coming down the road. Now, I'm about getting ready to wrap up tonight, unless I got some folks that want to call in. Penny, we did have the one caller with all the ones. Did that person still want to come on the air? Can you send me a little text message, Penny, if that person, you put a little note on there. But I wasn't really certain whether or not, okay, so you're saying a no. And, folks, I'm not seeing any other questions in the chat room. So I think I kind of said everything I want to talk about tonight. Hey, go to my blog site, SedonaConnection.com, and there you can listen to the radio program that I had last night with Bernadette. It was a great program. Some of you have already sent me emails saying it's one of the best overall programs that you've ever heard. It kind of puts everything into a nutshell, how it all works. And folks, also, yeah, you go to my blog site, there's a donate tab that is there. Again, all of you that donated about 3 weeks ago, I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you so very much. This is how I'm making my living. I won't need any more money once the reval happens. I hope it happens this week. But like you, I have bills to pay. And it is taking full time for me. I went overnight to within just a few weeks having over 20,000 hits on my blog site, 2,500 emails, and I have virtually read, answered every one of those emails. I love doing that, but also, I just got some bills to pay, so if you feel that it's comfortable for you, if you've got a little bit that is there, you can go on, you can click on the donate tab, and you can use a debit card or credit card through PayPal. That's what's going to help me go on. Hopefully it's only one more week and I don't even have to say that again, okay? So, love you all, folks. Oh, we've got one more caller who just came in. And, Penny, I think what I'm going to do, I'm just going to go right straight to that person because otherwise I was getting ready to check out. So, the caller that's listening from area code 416, I don't even know your name yet.
I'm calling from Toronto, Canada.
Are with me. This is Dave. Can I get your name?
Neil.
Hi, how are you? Where are you calling from?
Oh, I'm calling from Toronto, Canada.
Toronto, Canada. What can I do for you tonight?
Well, I have a couple of quick questions, simple questions, but they're confusing me a little. Of course, the banking system in Canada is different. There are five or six big, huge banks, and therefore I don't think they're very much in competition, actually. So to get that difference between buy and sell, I don't think there's much point in it. But you have been talking about taking a 25,000 bill initially, and the smallest I could get is 250,000. So is it going to be a problem if it's too large? And the other thing is, you were saying that in one of your other things that you should take just one note initially, and 4 or 5 days later or a week later take the rest of it. Does that still apply, or are you changing that a little? Hello?
Okay, you're breaking up just a little bit there, but if what I'm hearing you say is, and it's what some of the writers on the blog have been recommending, is when the reval happens, just take one of your notes, whether it's a dong or a dinar, and basically get some quick operating money. It's, you know, take a 25,000 dinar note or a 10,000 dong note, take it into the bank, get some cash out of it, put into your current checking account so you've got some quick operating money, and then call that 800 number to set up your appointment to do the rest of the money. And that's what they've been saying, and that's what they are recommending, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take in, I'll wait and see, look at what the rates will be, and I'll take in one of my dong or dinar and get some really quick operating money. And so I have that in my bank account, and then I'm in the position to, and I may call the 800 number first. You know, I'll see what is there and set up my appointment first. But you don't want to take all of it into the local branch. You don't want to do that. You want to go to the private meeting. It's better security. It's safer. The word is you're going to get the higher rate there. You're going to have personal attention with people who have been trained to do this for you and with you. When you go into the teller window, they may not know what to do. But you can take one single one just to get some quick operating cash. Now, does that make sense to you? Does that answer your question?
Yeah, well, as I was saying, the smallest note I have, it's $250,000. That's going to be quite a shock, I think, to the local bank man. The 800 numbers don't apply in Canada as far as I know. And it's dong I have.
Yeah. You know, it's up to you what fits for you. If you need some quick operating cash, just take the lowest one you got. If it's a 250,000 dong, if I heard you right, then take it in and put it in your bank account. They're not going to give you a ton of cash. They're going to put most of it into your bank account. But you want to make sure you know the difference of the exchange rates. If it's a dong and if the difference is, you know, 387 versus 47, I'm not going to take it into the teller window and get 47 cents. I'll take it into the private exchange to get my 387. I'll go borrow some money for operating cash if I have to, you know. I mean, you know, sit down and have a game plan. Work a game plan out for yourself. What works for you? Do your game.
All right. Well, look, thank you. I appreciate what you're doing, and I'm sorry to take up your time at the very end here.
Well, you don't need to apologize for taking up my time. This is what I'm here for. This is what I love to do. I'm glad to help. It's fitting for me. It's nice when you know you're doing something that, yeah, I'm good at this. I know my stuff here, and I love to help people. It's very, very rewarding for me. You know, I was sharing with a friend of mine. I didn't go looking for it. It kind of found me more than I found it. But I'm loving what I'm doing. I'm really glad to be able to do this. And you're not taking up my time. And you can send me emails, folks. If you got questions, don't feel you're bothering me by asking me, you know. Hey, there was the initial rush for the first couple of weeks. I was swamped. But I'm in a manageable position now. If you got questions, send me an email. You can send it to DaveSchmidt@MSN.com. So, okay. All right. Anything else on there?
Good night.
Thanks, Bill. Okay. Thanks for calling. And folks, and I really mean that, okay? If you got questions, if some of the stuff isn't making sense to you, what they're writing on the blog, and it's bothering you, you're not, send me an email. This is what I'm here for. We as a collective group, you know, some of you, if you've got $20, send me $20, whatever it is, whatever you're comfortable with, whatever fits for you. You know, we're in this together, and this is what allows me to help you. Otherwise, I have to go get another job, but I'm fine. I'm, you know, I've got enough to keep me going here for another week or so. But I don't like asking for money, so I'm not in that position where I have to have anything right now, but I'm loving what I'm doing here. And you can go in onto my blog site, and you can read the newsletter that I put on there about the request that I made. Told you my whole story, if you haven't heard that. I'm out in the open, folks. I don't hide anything. That's how I live my life. I've had people tell me, of all the people writing on the blog sites, I'm the only one that uses my real name. I give you my real email, daveschmidt@msn.com. Anybody can go to me and they can find my address. I mean, you know, on the blog site, you can get my phone number. It's on my Facebook page. I don't hide anything. I don't. Because I'm someone who chooses to not live my life in fear. That's just me. You want to get me on a soapbox? Don't come into me with a lot of fear, because I'll get on my soapbox. Because fear is the most destructive force in this universe. It is the opposite of love. Love is the most powerful force in the universe, and fear is its opposite. Fear is what keeps us from experiencing our dreams. Fear is what destroys lives. Fear is what has kept us in slavery for centuries. Fear is what stops you more than anything else. You know, when you come back and you come to the biblical verses dealing with faith, faith is an aspect of love. Faith is an aspect of love. When you are operating in the position of faith, you're operating in the position of believing and loving. And fear is the opposite of that. Fear is what stops you. Faith is what produced the miracles in the Bible that we read about. It was the people of faith. Faith was something that was so strong that Jesus said in the Gospels, he could see it in them. With it becomes a very powerful and loving energy that transforms you. You can see fear in people. You can see faith in people. You can see love in people. I get in my soapbox when it comes to fear. So I don't go there. I just refuse to go there. Has it happened for me overnight? No. It's been a process. A number of years working at this for me to come to that point, to where I'm just not going to respond out of fear. So, well, folks, I don't have any more callers. I don't have anybody else in the chat room. So I am willing to say thank you so much for joining us tonight. I'm willing to basically call it an evening. Love you all so much. Thank you for being, we're getting a nice family that's developing here. And hopefully next week, we're talking about what are you going to do with your money. Okay? Thanks. Good night. Good night, folks. It's Dave with the Sedona Connection. Love you all.